The last few Mishnayos of the Masechta discuss the concept of Tuchum Shabbos for items. That just like a person is not allowed to travel more than 2,000 Amos outside of his city on Shabbos or Yom Tov, the same applies for his items and belongings. The previous Mishnah introduced us to the fact that this depends on whoever is using that item over Shabbos or Yom Tov. Not necessarily the owner of the item, but whoever is set to use that item. As well as that, we learned in the previous Mishnah that it depends on the time that Shabbos or Yom Tov begins. Whoever the item is associated with at the time that Shabbos or Yom Tov begins, that's the tuchum which is given to that item. And because of that, Hashoyel Kli Mechaveirim Erev Yom Tov, one who borrows an item from his friend before Yom Tov, on the day before Yom Tov, Keragli Hashoyel, that item has the status, it has the same tuchum, it can travel the same distance as the borrower. Even though the borrower is not the owner of the item, the use is associated with the borrower already from the beginning of Yom Tov. However, beyond Tov, if he only borrows it on Yom Tov, and they only agree about borrowing it on Yom Tov, Keragli Hamashel, so then it has the tuchum of the lender, since he was the one who was set to use it at the time that Yom Tov began. Ha'isha Shashalem Mechaverta, a woman who borrows from her friend Tavlin, spices, umayim, and water, umelach, and salt. We're discussing quite large chunks of salt, which even once you've cooked the dish, you can still clearly recognize the salt in that mixture. So she borrows these ingredients, le'sasa, for her dough. So her dough is made up of partly her own ingredients, and partly the ingredients of somebody else. And she only borrowed those ingredients on Yom Tov. Says the Mishnah, Hari Elu Keragli Shteyen, the tuchum is bound by both of the women's tuchum, and can only be taken to a place where both women are allowed to travel to, since the dough is made up of some things which are bound by her tuchum and some things which are bound by the other woman's tuchum. Continues the Mishnah, Rabbi Yehuda Poter B'Mayim. Rabbi Yehuda exempts one when it comes to water, meaning if, let's say, the only ingredient which she borrowed was water, so in that case she would not be bound by the other woman's tuchum, because there is no significant substance which is recognizable in the water. Once the dough has been made, and the bread or whatever dish she is making has been cooked or baked, so the water cannot be seen at all as being part of that dish, and therefore that final product is not bound by the tuchum of the water. However, the spices and the salt, they are still recognizable. Again, we're talking about larger chunks of salt. They are still part of the dough, and the final product is clearly made up of those, and therefore it would be bound by the tuchum of the spices and the salt. Mishnah Hey, the Mishnah brings a similar example of something which does not have Ein Bohem Mamush. It hasn't got a real substance to it, and therefore is not really bound to any tuchum. In the previous example, if the water was by itself, so in general water would be bound by the tuchum. However, if it's part of a dough, and once it's part of the dough it's not recognizable, so then it is not bound by tuchum. The example of the Mishnah now is something which intrinsically has not got really any substance to it, and therefore is never bound by the Tchum Shabbos. Hagacheles, a coal, so that certainly does have substance, Kragli Haba'olim, that follows the Tchum of the owner, and in this case the owner does not necessarily mean the one who literally owns it, but it means the one who is set to use that item over Shabbos or Yom Tov. And again, it depends on whoever has it, and whoever is set to use that item at the beginning of Shabbos or Yom Tov. But on the other hand, v'shal heves, the flame itself, b'chol mokom, that can travel anywhere, that can be taken anywhere. Meaning, if let's say somebody comes with a candle, and he lights his candle from somebody else's flame, once that candle is alight, it can travel wherever the candle can go, and it is not bound by the tuchum of the owner of the original flame. Again, because it's not really considered to be an item in itself. It has no substance to it. The Mishnah now brings another two examples of where this plays out. Two other ramifications of the point that this has no substance to it. And the first one regards Me'ilah. Me'ilah is when somebody uses something which belongs to the Beis HaMikdash for his own personal benefit. That is forbidden, and the punishment for doing so is that he has to bring a korban, and he also has to pay a particular fine. Be as it may, says the Mishnah, Gacheles Shel Hekdash, a piece of coal which belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, Mo'alim Ba. One would be liable for Me'ilah if he uses that for his own benefit, because the coal does have substance to it, v'shal heves, but the flame itself, if somebody benefits only from the flame, so mid'oraisa, since it has no substance to it, there's no Me'ilah. However, mid'rabbonon le'nehenin, one can still not benefit from it, mid'rabbonon, just like you're not allowed to benefit from anything which belongs to the Beis HaMikdash. But v'lo ma'alim, one would not be liable to me'ilah, to bring a korban, or to pay the extra fine, if he did violate that prohibition of midrabanan. Since midoraisa, it's not considered to be me'ilah, and one only brings a korban if he violated a Torah prohibition. Alright, and the second ramification which the Mishnah brings is regarding the prohibition of carrying in a public domain on Shabbos. Hamoitzig acheles l'rishus harabim, one who takes out a piece of coal to a public domain on Shabbos, chayev, he is liable for having violated Shabbos. V'shal heves, but if he only takes out the intangible flame, potter, he would be exempt, again, because ein bo mamash, it is not tangible and it has no substance. The second half of the Mishnah discusses water from pits, and depending what exactly the status of those pits are. So we have three different types of pits. The first one is Bershal Yochid, a pit of water in the ground, which belongs to an individual, Keragle HaYochid, so it's bound by the legs, literally, by the tchum of that individual. Bershal Anshei Eis HaHa'ir, a pit of water which belongs to the people of that city. The city has pits of water throughout the city. It's public property for everybody. Keragle Anshei Eis HaHa'ir, that is bound by the feet, by the tchum of the people of that city. Meaning that can be taken 2,000 amos in every direction from the edge of the city. That's considered the city's tchum. And thirdly, Vishal Ole Bovel, pits of water of those who are coming up from Bovel, and this refers to the wells and the pits of water which were dug on the roads coming from Bovel to Eretz Yisrael for people who were coming for the Sholosh Regalim, for the three Yomim Tovim of Pesach, Shavuos, and Sukkos. So in order that they would have water available as they were coming up to do Aliyah LeRegel, to come to the Beis HaMikdash for the Yom Tov, so that water is actually considered to be Hefker. It's considered to be ownerless, which means, interestingly, that although in general the tchum of something is decided at the beginning of Shabbos or Yom Tov, when it comes to something which didn't belong to anybody at the beginning of Shabbos or Yom Tov, so it has no tchum at all at the beginning of Shabbos or Yom Tov. Only when somebody actually takes the water on Shabbos or Yom Tov, only then would its tchum be decided. Keragle hamamale, like the feet, like the tchum of the one who fills up from that pit. Meaning whoever takes the water from there, the water becomes his, and immediately the tchum of that item of the water will be the same as the tchum of that person himself. Mishnah Vov, though one can only travel 2,000 amos in every direction on Shabbos, there is a way, by making an Eiruv Tchumin, a particular type of Eiruv, that he will be able to travel 4,000 amos in a particular direction, but then he wouldn't be able to travel in the opposite direction at all. Meaning, if you think about it, in general, where everyone is, that's his center, and from that center point, where he is spending Shabbos, he has 2,000 amos in every direction. Now, by making an Eiruv Tchumin, which is generally made by putting some food in a different area, so if somebody, let's say, puts food before Shabbos begins, he makes an Eiruv Tchumin 1,000 amos from where he lives. 1,000 amos outside of his city. So he has now defined that his center point, which is known as the Mokim HaShavisa, the place where he's, so to speak, spending Shabbos, that's where he is, that's considered his living place for Shabbos. He has defined that it is not where he lives right now, but it's 1,000 amos outside of his city. Which means that his 2,000 amos in every direction begins from that point. So it follows that somebody would be able to travel 4,000 amos from the edge of his city in one particular direction, if he made his Erev Tchumen 2,000 amos, or just within 2,000 amos of his city, that's the maximum, then he'd be able to travel 4,000 amos. Why? Because the place where he put the Erev Tchum in would be considered the center. So he's got 2,000 amos from there to his city. And also from there in the other direction, continuing, so he would be able to travel 4,000 amos in a particular direction. It does mean, however, that he will not be able to travel at all in the opposite direction on the other side of the city. Because now his center is not the city, his center is 2,000 amos away. The city itself can be travelled in its entirety. It's not calculated as part of the 2,000 amos. Be as it may, Mishoi Peroisov Be'ir Acheres. The Mishnah brings a case of somebody who had produce or fruit in a different city. And let's say, for example, that city was 3,500 amos away from his own city. So if he does not make an Erev at all, then he would not be able to travel to that city. Now, in this case, the Erev Bnei Eis HaHa'ir, people living in that neighboring city, 3,500 amos away, they made an Erev Tchumen, Lehovi Etzlai Mipereisov, to bring some of his fruit to him on Shabbos or Yom Tov. And we're discussing a case where they are not responsible over the fruit, and so the use of the fruit is totally associated with the owner, and not with the people living in that city. Says the Mishnah, they are not allowed to bring the fruit to him, since it's all very nice that they are allowed to travel from their city to this city, since they made an Erev Techumen. However, the Techum of the fruit itself is not dependent on their Techum, it's dependent on the Techum of the owner of the fruit. And the owner himself did not make an Erev, so he is not allowed to travel all the way to the city where the fruit are, which means that the fruit themselves cannot be moved outside of their city at all, because they would be then be carried outside of the owner's tuchum, which is really the item's tuchum as well. Only if im erev hu, only if he made an erev, so he is able to go to the other city, and the fruit are within his tuchum as well, only then perosav kamoihu, would his fruit be considered like him, and share his own tuchum, in which case the other people would be able to bring those fruit to him on Shabbos or Yom Tov. Mishnah Zayin, Mishnah Zimun etz l'orchim, somebody who invited guests to come to him over Shabbos or Yom Tov, and we're discussing a case where the guests came from outside of the tuchum of the host. Let's say they lived 3,000 amos away, and the host made no Erev, and only the guests made an Erev so that they would be able to come to this person on Shabbos or Yom Tov. So they are able to come to him and to return to their original city, but the host would not be able to go to their city. Says the Mishnah, Le'yelichu b'yodomonos, they are not allowed to bring in their hands portions of the food, meaning they cannot take anything from the host to bring back to their own city, since at the time that Shabbos Yom Tov began, those things were associated with the use of the host, so they have the tuchum of the host, and that does not reach their other city. Elohim Cain, unless Zikolo Hemonoisim Erev Yom Tov. He gave over the ownership of their portions before Yom Tov began. One is able to transfer ownership to somebody else, even if that person is not here right now. I would be able to get somebody else to do an act of acquisition, to let's say lift that item up, and say that he is acquiring that item, he is taking ownership of that item on behalf of somebody else, in this case on behalf of the guests. And that way those things belong and are associated with the guests already when Yom Tov begins, and as such the tuchum of those items is like the tuchum of the guests. Now the last half of this Mishnah and the end of this Masechta does not continue this discussion of tuchum Shabbos, rather it goes back to one of the main discussions of the Masechta, and that is Muktzah, specifically regarding animals, which again was a very large part of the Masechta. And before slaughtering an animal, they would often get that animal to drink a lot, in order that it'd be easier once you've slaughtered the animal, to take the skin off the animal, etc. The processes which are done after slaughtering are easier if the animal had drunk quite a bit of water before that. And so the way we're going to understand the Mishnah is that in general, even if an animal is considered muktzah, one is still allowed to give it water to drink, since that doesn't really involve you moving the animal at all, so you would be able to give it to drink. However, if it is muktzah, one cannot slaughter that animal. So the Mishnah says, in mashkin v'sheichten samid boreis, it is forbidden to give the animal to drink, and then slaughter it, if the animal is one which roams around in the desert, in the wilderness, far away from the city. If it's a sort of animal which comes back only every few days, or even longer than that, but it generally spends its time outside of the city, and relatively far away from the city, so one does not designate it for use before Yom Tov or Shabbos, and therefore it's considered to be muktzah, so it's forbidden to slaughter it. And again, when the Mishnah says that you can't give it to drink, that doesn't necessarily mean you cannot give it to drink at all. It means you can't do that in preparation of slaughtering it, since it is forbidden to slaughter the animal, since it's muktzah. Avol mashkin v'sheichten sabayosos, but one would be able to give to drink and slaughter bayosos, which literally means house animals. That refers to animals which are generally found in the city itself. They don't roam around very far away, because they are not considered to be muktzah, since they are around, since people do have that in mind before Yom Tov begins, that he might slaughter that animal, and therefore it's not considered to be muktzah. And the Mishnah defines Elohim Bayosos, what are considered to be Bayosos that are not Muktzah, Halonis Bo'ir, those animals which sleep in the city. Even if during the day they roam quite far out, as long as they come back every night and sleep within the city, or perhaps just outside of the city, they would not be considered to be Muktzah. Midborios, what are considered to be desert animals, which are considered Muktzah, Halonis Bo'afar, those which sleep in the open where they generally graze, those are considered to be muktzah and would not be able to be slaughtered even on Yom Tov.